Good morning.
Good morning.
I want, first of all, to thank the two coordinators of this session. They've been doing it year after year, and Carol Easley Allen and Barry Levy have made enormous contributions to these annual meetings by this late-breaking developments in public health session. And so my hat's off to both of them. Barry introduced me by using the title, not of something that I've written, but of a session that follows this one. It's at 10:30 a.m. in this convention center in room 16A, and the title of that is indeed Lies, Fraud, Waste, and Death in the War on Bioterrorism. One of the authors of this paper, Dr. Hillel Cohen, will be speaking at that session, and several other people. And well, I wish I indeed could summarize what I'm going to say in those few words. Indeed, I think by the time I'm done, you will recognize that my topic also is lies, fraud, waste, and death in the war on bioterrorism. It's interesting that we just heard a brilliant discussion by Linda Rosenstock with regard to the need for public health workers. And obviously, she is right on the mark. But in her list of work for public health workers to do, one of the lines of it said the issues of bioterrorism. And one of the questions that we need to ask is, in a time of shortage of public health workers, in a time of shortage of resources, is indeed the enormous fear that has been generated, politically generated, by this administration and by others of bioterrorism really worth diverting our precious public health dollars to? Now, I'm going to have to do this reasonably quickly, and I'm going to skip a couple of slides. Fortunately, APHA has made the presentations available, so if any of these slides that go by quickly you'd like to look at, they will be available to you. I won't burden you with reviewing what you all know. That is the way in which the shortly after the attack on the World Trade Center, a number of envelopes containing anthrax spores were sent to media and to legislators in the United States. 11 cases of inhalation anthrax, 7 cases of cutaneous anthrax place, including 5 fatalities. But the interesting question is, with all of the enormous public health problems in the world, is this really worth the attention that's been paid for it, the years of FBI investigation, the ways in which the diversion of public health resources have been taken? This is, of course, the way in which the media were directly attacked, advertised this. And in the aftermath of the attack, all of those events occurred, including a number of hoaxes. In fact, just in these past 2 weeks, there have been a series of envelopes mailed in the United States with a white powder. It turned out not to be a threat, but of course it was a threat because it was a hoax based on this hyperbole with regard to the threat. Simply a painting that illustrates this painting, of course, was stolen, and the fear was dissipated about its theft when it was recovered, but this is an interesting metaphor for the production of fear and trying to work with it. One of the first events was, of course, considering this a threat from Iraq, and the administration said that the Iraq had weapons of mass destruction that were ready to be visited upon the United States. That, of course, was proven false for weapons of mass destruction. The drones that Iraq was said to be ready to use to attack the United States were nothing of the kind. And then began this 11-year investigation, enormous expense, and even more important than the expense, the way in which the careers and lives of people have been destroyed by that investigation and by the media hyperbole with regard to it. began with Stephen Hatfill, who eventually collected $4.6 million in damages because of the leaks. It went on to Dr. Ivins, who committed suicide, in part, we believe, because of the insinuations, the threats that were made by the FBI to indict him, and by a, quote, overdose of Tylenol. I've never quite heard of a overdose of Tylenol producing suicide, but leaving that aside, here was another victim. In fact, this is indeed a victim of bioterrorism. Whether he distributed the envelopes or not, he was a victim of the investigation of bioterrorism. And there is now a release of the sealed FBI records, and this is now going forward. But the 3 points that I want to concentrate on, because of the time, what I want to do is concentrate on these threats, and the three are expanded anthrax immunization programs, the proliferation of bioweapons research laboratories, and the diversion of public health resources. The United States continues to provide immunization for anthrax for its members of its armed services, and there is no good evidence that this material, the bioimmunization that's being used, is indeed effective against inhalation anthrax. But now, of course, people make money from the production of this vaccine, and so the Public Health Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, which was adopted by the Congress in 2005, protects the manufacturers from suits with regard to this. And would you believe, in October of this year, the Department of Health and Human Services issued a declaration of public health emergency with regard to anthrax. And what that permitted them to do was to call for, and I don't know the results of this yet, I'm not sure they've been released, the CDC Advisory Committee on Immunization Practice just a couple of days ago was supposed to expand its recommendations to immunize 3 million civilian first responders. And of course, this is a bonanza for the company that produces the anthrax vaccine. The second point that I want to stress is the proliferation of research labs. There have been a number of level four laboratories developed in the United States, and the risks of these laboratories include danger to the workers, danger if the material leaks out of the compound to people in the surrounding community. And as we look at a map of these high containment laboratories throughout the United States, it's a huge industry. And when we look at one of them, which is proposed for Boston University, a number of people in Boston and other places have talked about the necessity for putting a high containment laboratory in the middle of a large and dense urban area. And finally, what I've already talked about was the diversion of resources. What has happened is the $8 billion in 2009, now that sounds like small potatoes compared to the amount that the US government has spent on the current economic crisis, but it is a large amount compared to other public health measures possible in the United States, and the diversion of those funds from other kinds of research are incredibly important. This is just an example. It will be available on the website of the kinds of infections that we could be working on that have nothing to do with human propagation of those resources. These are, quote, natural events. And internationally, of course, you're all aware of the need for public health resources. In fact, I've just mentioned beautifully by Linda Rosenstock of what needs to be done with regard to health around the world. The United States, shamefully, while it has plenty of money to spend on things like the so-called threat of bioterrorism, it does not provide anywhere near the 0.7% of gross national income that the United Nations has said the developed countries, the industrialized countries of the world should be providing an official development aid for poor countries. And so, the bottom line, what do we want people to do in the United States and other countries with regard to this threat? Well, first of all, they need to stop the hazardous and ineffective immunization programs against anthrax. There's no good way to prove the effectiveness of anthrax, but in the light of the fact that these only kinds of threats have been these kinds of threats emanating from biosafety laboratories in the United States, a great question has to be asked whether this has to be a required immunization. Stockpiling and prepared-to-use methods such as barriers and antibiotics, these are indeed non-harmful methods. In fact, antibiotics can be used only when there is some evidence of infection. And if we use these methods rather than immunization, it's both better for those we're trying to protect and saving of resources. The most important point, of course, is closing the current bioweapons laboratories. They are an extremely important source, as we've seen, of these kinds of infections, and therefore they need to be closed and further work need not to be done. The laboratories, indeed, are needed for other kinds of diseases, but for bioweapons threats, they need to get lower priorities. And finally, the adherence to the Bioweapons Convention. This is a convention that requires all nations to cease the production, the research on, the stockpiling of biological weapons. The United States, for its shame, has never signed that convention. It needs to sign that convention. It needs to work much harder on the kinds of things that need to be done with regard to it. And the last slide, I believe, next, it's up to me, is Joshua Lederberg. Joshua Lederberg died this past year. He was honored by the actually in the open general session, you may have seen his name in the screen of people who died over the past year, APHA members. And Lederberg said, there is no technical solution to the problem of biological weapons. It needs an ethical, human, and moral solution if it's going to happen at all. The ethical, human, and moral solutions means signing the Biological Weapons Convention and, even more important, acting in accordance with the Biological Weapons Convention. I think that's all I have time for, and be happy to answer questions. Thank you.
We have time for one question. Somebody would like to come up to the microphone. Any question or comment on Dr. Seidel's presentation? Do we all agree? Thank you very much.
Let me just remind you that if you want further information, there's a session beginning at right after this one. That is at 10:30 a.m. in room 16A in this building, which covers these issues in greater depth. Thank you.